Hello, it's Karen Brown here from Go Green Inside. Today on the podcast, we'll be talking about a very big topic, the key factors that may contribute to the radical remission of cancer. Joining me is Dr. Kelly Turner, a researcher, lecturer, and consultant in the field of integrative oncology, who received her BA from Harvard and her PhD from the University of California, Berkeley. Her particular research focus is what she terms radical remission, which is also the name of her newly released book, which has already hit the New York Times bestseller list. Hi, Dr. Turner, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, congratulations on the publication of the book and the success already. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just so glad that people are resonating with this idea of studying people who've healed as opposed to only those who get sick.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the most important things that we should be focusing on. So I want to say right off the bat that I think this is an incredibly important topic. I think it's amazing work that you're doing, and it's a very important book, and I really think it's one that needs and deserves to be widely read and talked about. So let's start with the title itself, which is Radical Remission. So how do you define that specifically?
Well, a radical remission is when someone heals from cancer, either without using any conventional medicine or after conventional medicine has done all that it can. So I'm really looking at people who heal from cancer when their doctors don't expect them to. And this is not to say that I'm against Western medicine at all. In fact, I'm not. I'm a huge proponent of whatever you need to get well, chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, whatever it is. Just as a researcher, I'm fascinated with this group that no one was really looking at, which is people who were basically sent home on hospice and their doctors said there's nothing more we can do. And a few of these people turn around stage 4 cancer and no one was even asking them any questions. So as a researcher, I'm interested in this very unique group. But, you know, as a person and as an author, I'm very clear in my right away in my introduction that I'm not against Western medicine.
And the other thing that really struck me as well when I was before I even opened the book, I had it in my hand, and the first thing that popped into my mind was, oh, you know, I can see there's probably going to be a lot of criticism from conventional, you know, system that you're offering false hope. And I was so happy that you, and I don't personally agree with that at all, and I don't feel that way about it even coming in before I read the book, and I certainly don't after, but I was really happy that literally on page 2 you just addressed that head on in those exact words. And so I'd be interested for you to tell our listeners, you know, what you said about that specifically.
It's very important to talk about false hope because that is the main reason that these people have not been studied. Everyone is so afraid of raising false hope that we're just completely ignoring these people who have found a cure to cancer, right? And so we do need to talk about it right away. False hope is only false if what you're talking about is false. So if these people didn't have cancer or if they didn't actually get well, then that would be false. Another thing that would be false would be if I were to say, if you do these 9 things, you will cure your cancer. That's not what I'm saying at all in my book. What I say very clearly is that these are the 9 common threads that this group of people has so far in the research. So there's no guarantee that these common threads will work for anyone else except for this group. We're at a very early stage of researching these people, right, because we haven't been researching them up until now. So all we can say is this is what these people did. We can't say yet that if you do it, you'll also get well. And so I'm very careful in my book to say that these are hypotheses about why these people may have gotten well, but they're not guarantees.
Right.
And once we go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, you finish your thought, please.
I was going to say, you know, once we decide that that's what's happening here, that these are just hypotheses and this is the beginning of this research, then if we're all on the same page with that, we can get over this fear of raising false hope and actually begin to learn from these people. Because I think what's a lot worse than false hope is completely ignoring people who've cured their cancer and missing out on that opportunity to learn something.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. And I think you make the point in the book that there's actually you believe that there are probably far more cases than there even have been documented because it's not really been studied.
Exactly. It's hugely underreported. There's no way for us to track these kinds of recoveries in the National Cancer Registries. There's no way to specify whether the remission happened, you know, outside or inside of Western medicine. So no one has any idea how often these are happening. Mm-hmm. And the only way we have an inkling of how often they're happening is if a doctor takes about 40 hours of unpaid time to write up the case report and submit it to a journal. And then the journal has to accept it for publication, which it often doesn't because there's a publication bias against raising false hope. So, you know, right now there's 1,000 published cases in the medical journals, and I estimate that for every case that's published, there are 100 more that have not been published, at least 100 more.
Wow. So how did you go about doing your research for this book?
Well, it's been 10 years now that I've been researching this, and I first had to decide how I wanted to approach this topic that no one was studying. And I've realized in all of these case reports in the medical journals, which, by the way, they've been published for, you know, since the beginning of medical journals, we have seen cases of radical remission. They're called spontaneous remission in the medical journals, and I talk about in my book why I don't like that term. But anyway, these cases have been happening since the beginning of recorded medical journals. But what I saw in the case reports was that these were just biomedical proceedings. You know, the patient X walked in with this, then they came back 6 months later with, you know, their scans were clear. And I kept thinking after I read each report, well, did anyone ask the patient if they did anything? You know, did anyone ask the patient why they think they healed? And
exactly.
They didn't. They didn't. Yeah. And almost every person that I've studied has said to me, Dr. Turner, you're the first person, you know, in a research capacity to ask me what I did to heal. My doctor didn't ask me what I did. So I'm glad that that was my approach, because clearly, you know, that's the part of this topic that hasn't been tackled yet, which is, well, what are these people doing? And so long story short, I spent the last 10 years studying these people, finding them wherever I could, including traveling for a year around the world to 10 different countries trying to find them and to find their healers, because a lot of these radical survivors literally travel to the ends of the earth to try to get well, and they go to see some really interesting integrative and alternative cancer healers. So I interviewed them as well.
Fabulous. Yeah, there's some really great stories in the book, which unfortunately we don't have time to delve into today, but really, really rich stories, and you use some of the scripts, I guess, from the interviews that you did with them, and really, it really helps illuminate and make very personal and real the message that you're telling in the book.
I really wanted to put stories in the book because, you know, when I sit across from someone who turned around their stage 4 lung cancer without Western medicine, when their doctor said, you have 3 months to live, when I'm done with that interview, I am so moved and so in awe of the body's self-healing ability. So I really pushed hard with my publisher to keep their full stories in the book, because I wanted the readers to have the experience that I had when I sat across and heard their full story.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what makes, I think, the book so powerful. In addition to kind of the hypothesis and how you lay it out, it's those stories that really do add that texture to it.
Yeah.
So we don't have a ton of time today, and I'm going to just say, because I'm very happy that you are going to be coming back and talking to us again at the Go Green Inside Telesummit, which is coming up, and I'll talk a little bit about that at the end. But we are going to be able to delve more deeply, much more deeply, we'll have about 45 minutes then to get into some really practical things that you found from the book. But what I'd like to do right now, just with the little bit of time that we have, is I'm just wondering, you found in the book 9 key factors that you discovered that each of the radical remission cases you studied had in common. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we could just very briefly touch on each of those, and then we'll take one that's perhaps a little bit more surprising and just talk a little bit about a little bit more about that one. But if we can just quickly go through those 9, that would be terrific.
Sure, yeah. So in my research, I was asking these people, what did you do to get well? And what I heard were over 75 different healing factors that people used to try to get well. So lots of different things. But of those 75, there were 9 that almost every single person did, all 9 of them. So not everyone did all 75, right? But almost everybody I studied did all 9 of the ones that I'm about to list. And so that's what the book presents, is the most common factors, these 9 most common factors. And they range from physical to emotional to spiritual. And the only 2 of them, surprisingly, were physical, changing your diet and taking herbs and supplements. So, and those I sort of expected, right? Those aren't as surprising.
Yes.
Because when Western medicine says there's nothing more you can do, a lot of people turn to nutrition and supplements. The other 7 were actually mental, emotional, and spiritual, and I'll just list them briefly. Taking control of your health, so that's taking an active as opposed to a passive role. Following your intuition when making health decisions, so not following it blindly, but using it as something that weighs into your decision-making, sort of checking in with it when you're making decisions. Releasing suppressed emotions, so any emotion that you're holding on to in your body. Also, increasing positive emotions. And I'm always quick to say that doesn't mean you have to be positive all the time. It just means that even on your hardest days, the people that I talked to tried to find at least 5 minutes where they could distract themselves from their fear and laugh or feel joy or feel gratitude. Next one was embracing social support, so really receiving the love from friends and family. Another one was deepening your spiritual connection. So I always like to point out that that one's not about what you believe in, so whether, you know, it doesn't matter what religion you have. It actually just matters that you have a practice, a spiritual practice that changes your internal chemistry. So when you do something like prayer or meditation or walking in nature, your brain waves actually change and your breathing changes and everything changes in a way that's very health promoting for the immune system. And last but not least was having strong reasons for living. So not so much fighting the cancer, not so much saying, I can't die, but more, I still want to live. There are things I want to do. So just a subtle difference there, because many of the people that I study weren't actually fighting. They were trying to heal their cancer. They weren't fighting it. So,
yes. Well, of those, and they're all topics that you could be an interview in and of themselves because
right,
of
I know
of information. Yeah. And as I said, in the telesummit coming up not too long from now, we will have an opportunity to really delve a little bit more deeply into these. But maybe we can just talk just briefly about the one that struck me in particular, which was releasing suppressed emotions. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah, that one came up a lot, obviously. It's one of the 9 most common factors in my research. And what it means is, according to the people I study, it means releasing any emotion that you're holding on to in your body. So usually those are emotions from your past, such as regret, resentment, anger, sorrow, grief. But it could also be emotions that you're holding on to for the future, such as worry or fear or stress. And the idea, according to the radical remission survivors, is that when you hold on to something, things can't flow in your body. And so you literally create like an emotional blockage that over time has physical ramifications. Now that's their theory, so take it or leave it, but that's what they said. And therefore what they did to try to heal was release anything they were holding on to so that their body could be this nice flowing open vessel with good circulation, with a flowing immune system, no garbage, no dead cells, just everything moving and clean and flowing. So, and sometimes you don't know what you're holding on to from the past, especially if you've had trauma from your childhood or anything. You might have to really dig hard to try to find out what you're holding on to. And doing things like psychotherapy or even hypnosis can help bring those things to the surface. And the gentleman that I profile or feature in this chapter is a man named Joe, and that's his real name. And he didn't know that he was harboring so much anger from his past. He just wasn't quite aware of that. What he did know is that life was not fun, and it was a burden. And he just felt like life was suffering. And he got up and went to work every day and just kind of trudged along. But, you know, he admits he was a glass half empty sort of guy. And that's when he was diagnosed with stage 3 lung cancer, advanced stage 3. And, you know, that's a very serious diagnosis. And his doctor said, you know, even with all the treatment, only about half people make it to 5 years. So, and by the way, the treatment's going to be cracking open your ribs and removing most of your lung and lymph nodes, and then multiple chemotherapy followed by radiation.
Wow.
And that's fine. That's the best that Western medicine has to offer right now for that prognosis. And for Joe, he said, okay, you know, I'll do it, but can I just take a trip first? I have this trip planned. I want to take my vacation. So anyway, it goes into much more detail in the book, but he ended up on this vacation sort of being led down this path of looking into his emotional past for healing. And he ended up seeing an energy healer back when he got back from the trip before he started chemo. Because of what had happened on the trip, he saw this energy healer, and she really said, you know, you have a lot of anger that you're holding onto from your childhood and from your relationship. Right now, he was in a long-term relationship. And she said, we got to get this out of you. We got to process this. And he went on a journey with her to really work through the roots of that anger. And he kept postponing chemotherapy because his scans kept getting better and better. And his doctors would just shake their head and say, what are you doing? You know, why are your tumors shrinking? And he said, you know, I don't know. I'm working with this healer, and I'm letting emotions go. So he still has never had to have any Western medicine, and he's just hit his 5-year anniversary.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you for sharing. That's a great story. And there are so many others that are wonderful in the book as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about your website, because it isn't just a place where you can go, although that's fabulous, to learn more about this. You're actually using it as a tool to continue your research. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah. So the website is radicalremission.com. And the idea is that, of course, the problem is that no one is studying these cases except for me, and no one's tracking them. And that's the big problem. We really don't know how often these cases are happening. And so I wanted to create a website where anyone could very quickly and easily submit their healing case, their radical remission case, to this research. But I also wanted to turn that around and allow cancer patients who are diagnosed with cancer to be able to read about these people and read these stories instead of, you know, them just being in a medical journal that's hard to find or hard to access. So it's a website where if you've had one of these healings, you can go and tell your story, and you can put a picture up if you'd like, or you can keep it anonymous. And it's also a website where if you have cancer, you can go there and say, show me all the cases of radical remission for breast cancer. And you can spend the night reading about that. And you'll learn, you'll see very quickly, just as I have in my research, that everyone is different. Every healing case is slightly different, but they do have a lot of these 9 themes. And so you see that, you know, not everyone has the identical path to healing, but there are common threads.
Right. And how do you verify that the cases are real?
Well, that's a long, lengthy process that is made more difficult with something in the U.S. called HIPAA, which is health privacy laws. So at the moment, cases come in, and we obviously look for things like profanity and, you know, spammers and stuff. But we do just we post things up, we take people on their word, and then pretty soon we're going to be putting a little, like, verified seal against on the ones where we've really seen the medical records or talked to the doctors to verify that these people did have cancer and they are well now. But you know what I've learned is that, for the most part, people don't lie about the fact that they've had cancer. They really don't.
Yeah.
It's not something most people want to lie about. And just like anything in crowdsourcing, you know, you're going to get, you know, a few people who are confused about their diagnosis or, you know, have other intentions. But for the most part, the stories that come in are beautiful and verifiable, and we have a lot to learn from them.
Absolutely. If there's one main thing that you want people to come away with from our discussion today, what would that be?
Well, what I've learned from my research these past 10 years is that radical healing is possible. So I think that there's, I get a lot of hope just from knowing that there's somebody out there who turned around stage 4 pancreatic cancer or stage 4 lung cancer. And so if there's one thing that I take away from my research, is that it's that healing is always possible. We're still learning about for whom and under what conditions it's possible. You know, we have a long way to go to know exactly why and how these people healed. But simply knowing they did it is an inspiration for me. Kind of like, you know, the first time someone climbed Mount Kilimanjaro or Mount Everest, mm-hmm. you know. You just if you were a mountain climber and you just heard that someone just climbed Mount Everest, just knowing that it's possible sort of opens things up for you, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that's a wonderful thought to leave our discussion with today. Dr. Turner, thank you so much for spending time with us, and I wish you all the best with this book and as you continue with the research. And the great thing is that I don't really have to say goodbye because we're inviting you back for our telesummit. So I look forward to sharing more stories and talking more in depth about the nine factors and about your work. And I really encourage people, if you've enjoyed this, and I'm sure you have, to come and check out our Child Summit, which is a free online event. It's happening May 6th to 15th, and we'll have more than a dozen experts who will be sharing their tips on living your healthiest, happiest, most inspired, and most sustainable life from the inside out. So we hope you enjoyed today's podcast. For more great tips on natural health, inspired living, and how to sustain your internal environment, please visit us at GoGreenInside.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at GoGreenInside. And don't forget to register for the Telesummit. Just go to our website and click the link at the top of our homepage. So thanks for listening. Be well, everybody. And bye, Dr. Turner. Thanks again so much.
Thanks for having me.